The first movement, and the one that I have actually spoken a lot about in a lot of detail, and wallahi, one of the most scary and dangerous movements in our recent history, is the movement of Juhayman ibn Sayf al-Utaybi from Mecca. Well, he's from Riyadh, and then he moved to Medina, and then he did what he did in Mecca. Many of you might not be aware, one of the saddest incidents in our recent Islamic history was the hijacking of the Kaaba itself. It's so bizarre. When I first say this story, people think I'm making it up. If you don't know this, ask your mother and father. Everybody knows who was alive in 1979. Everybody who was an adult in 1979 and a Muslim knows of this story. The Kaaba itself was hijacked. It was held hostage. The Kaaba. Not by a group of pagans, not by a group of idol worshippers, not by a group of kuffar, by a group of ultra-fundamentalist fanatics that were so quote-unquote righteous and pious that many of the senior scholars alive at the time did not know what to make of it. Why? Because they thought these people were good people. They thought these people were righteous people. And this is why it's so scary that there is a fine line between fanaticism and between righteousness. There's a fine line between fanaticism and righteousness. And that line is sometimes difficult to distinguish, even for people of great knowledge and great stature. Who is this man, Juhayman? To be very brief, and I've spoken about this in a lot more detail, and I've also presented academic papers about this individual and his thought. Juhayman lived an average life. He joined the National Guard as a young man, and he became more and more religious. As he became older, he eventually quit the National Guard, and he's living at a time in the 60s and 70s when Saudi Arabia is for the first time experiencing money, materialism. And he sees in front of him all of the wealth pouring in. And he sees the changes in lifestyles. He sees people now living the life, building big mansions. He sees non-Muslims coming in, engineers, doctors, and their lifestyles also now being imported. And there was a time in Arabia when alcohol could be available. It wasn't as strict as it is now that you could purchase alcohol. Music and television is now being introduced for the first time. Now, this is a very Bedouin, very closed culture. Perhaps it still is in many ways. It's a very closed culture. And now in the 70s, for the first time, for the first time, there are women without hijab on television. There is music coming on television. And this is enraging him. It's incensed him. He quits his job and he moves to the holy city of Medina, and he begins a grassroots movement, which was called the movement of accountability, Ad-Da'watul Muhtasiba, the movement of accountability. And the movement was popular amongst the masses, and it would go preaching and teaching door to door, masjid to masjid, and it would also try to enforce law on people. So a number of times when he would come across a music store in Medina — there were music stores in Medina, may I shock you and say there are still music stores in Medina, but there were music stores in Medina — and he would find these stores and he would break the glass and take the stuff and destroy it and then move on. Now, technically, whatever you believe about music, it's not your job as an average Muslim to go break into a store and destroy the property. It's not your job. But he took it on himself that this is my job now, to go and destroy music and other things of this nature as well. And he started criticizing the Saudi government, the royal family, for what he perceived to be the excesses of the government, for the lifestyle of the princes and the playboys and whatnot, and what is happening to our society, our religion is becoming bad and whatnot. And eventually, in 1976, Juhayman decided to start a smaller, private, secret movement. And this movement, he called it the Ikhwan, nothing to do with the Ikhwan of Egypt. This is nothing like that. This is just a smaller cult type of movement. And he moved to a small village outside of Medina, and he began training in military expeditions, in warfare, in training people how to use firearms. And this was outside the city of Medina. And obviously the city of Medina has the very famous university that I'm very, very proud and humbled to be a graduate of, the Islamic University of Medina. I studied there for 10 years, a bachelor's and a master's. And some of my own teachers were alive and contemporaneous to this movement of Juhayman. And I heard many, many stories For some reason, I always had an interest in this story. And so as long back as I can remember, I'm always asking my teachers about stories. So I know a lot of the internal stories that you're not going to find in the newspapers and whatnot from this story. And some of my own teachers knew people that were a part of Juhayman's movement. One of my teachers was a friend of Juhayman, actually was in his house a few days before the Meccan attack, and he didn't know what Juhayman was going to do. In any case, Juhayman started preaching a new theology that was very top secret. What is that top secret? The theology was, we now have the Mahdi in our midst. His brother-in-law became the Mahdi. We have the Mahdi in our midst. And this Mahdi shall overtake the Haram, shall destroy the forces that are sent against him, and we shall establish peace on this earth. We shall eliminate the evil of the Saudi royal family, we shall eliminate the evil of Saudi Arabia, and there will be peace on earth. What is the means for this achievement? We need to go straight to the Kaaba and take control of the Kaaba. Why? Because there's a hadith in Abu Dawood. In fact, it's not just Abu Dawood, it's also in Bukhari and others, that our Prophet ﷺ said that a man, the Mahdi, shall flee from the oppression and seek refuge in the Kaaba. And armies will be sent to destroy or to kill him. But Allah will cause the earth to swallow those armies up. Now this is the hadith. What did Juhayman do? He wanted to make a real life movie out of the hadith. He wanted to make a script out of the hadith. And he decided, why don't I play the actor of the Mahdi? Or my brother-in-law play the actor of the Mahdi. And Allah will then execute the script on my behalf. And this is not allowed in Islam. You don't execute the ahadith of the Prophet ﷺ upon yourself as if he meant you. And in fact, many of the ahadith don't apply to him because the Mahdi shall flee, not take the Kaaba hostage. The Mahdi won't have an army. He had 600 people, armed guards taking the Kaaba hostage. The Mahdi will not kill any innocent people. And Juhayman killed at least 100 people. So the point being that he thought he's implementing the hadith. So what did he do? On the 20th of November in 1979, which corresponds to the 1st of Muharram, 1400. So he wanted to be at the beginning of the Islamic New Year. Why? Another hadith. What is that hadith? At the beginning of every 100 years, Allah will send a renewer, a mujaddid. So he thought, let me use the hadith of Abu Dawood and the hadith of the mujaddid. Let's put them all together on the 1st of Muharram, 1400 Hijrah. I will attack the Kaaba or take the Kaaba hostage. So what he did was, before Salat al-Fajr, he entered the Haram, and he entered the Haram with biers, the funeral pyre, the funeral processions of the coffins. But instead of dead people, those coffins actually had machine guns in them. And in those days, there was no checking at the Haram door. All of this checking in Saudi Arabia began after 1979. In those days, there were no armed guards in front of the Haram. Who could ever imagine somebody would attack the Haram? In those days, Saudi Arabia was a very different place. So, Juhayman enters with dozens of these funerals, fake funerals in different areas, and his followers congregate. There was a basement in the Haram, and after Salat al-Fajr, Juhayman positions himself behind the Imam. As soon as the Imam finishes, it was actually Sheikh Subayl. Sheikh Subayl is still alive right now as we speak, very elderly man. It was Sheikh Subayl was leading Salat al-Fajr. As soon as the Sheikh finished Salat al-Fajr, Juhayman's man pulled out his gun and took the microphone by force, and Juhayman began telling all of the people in the Haram that lo and behold, the Day of Judgment is close, the Al Saud is the worst government in the world, the Saudis are losing their religion, and we have the Mahdi. So come forth and give your oath of allegiance to the Mahdi. And of course, the people are totally confused. Many of them don't understand Arabic, right? Most of them are Pakistani, Indonesian, but they have no idea what's going on. But he locked the doors down and shut off all the exits, and thus began a long siege, which I don't have time to get into. It's been documented in other places. For almost two weeks, the people were held hostage. The Kaaba itself was held hostage. Tawaf ceased to be performed. The five daily salawat were not said. And when the Saudi forces, who no doubt there's a lot to blame in terms of their military maneuvers, it's not my point here to point out which side did more of the mistakes. My point is to point out Juhayman's fanaticism. I'm not defending the ineptitude of the Saudi government and how it responded. That's a whole different issue. But I'm saying the fanaticism of Juhayman, that's what I'm concerned about in this lecture. The Saudis didn't know how to react. They sent a few troops in, and Juhayman's forces had snipers on, you know, the minarets, the same minarets that you see all all the way on the top. They shot down these snipers. Blood was shed in the Haram, the holiest place on earth. Blood was shed. And the Saudis did not know what to do, turned into a siege. Eventually, after 2 weeks and over 100 people dead, the Saudis just stormed into the Haram with tanks. You know the staircases you walk up? Tanks went up. The doors you see, tanks pulled open those doors. Grenades were thrown. There was a shootout in the shadow of the Kaaba. It is estimated, nobody knows the truth, that around 500 to 600 people died in front of the Kaaba. And Juhayman and his followers were eventually caught. The Mahdi was shot in the attack. Some rumor that Juhayman himself shot him. And Juhayman was captured alive. And he was executed in front of the people in public after the trial and whatnot. And there is video. There is pictures. You can see Juhayman on YouTube. Google it or YouTube it. Juhayman, Makkah takeover 1979. You will see videos of Juhayman being captured. And wallahi, you see him. And I swear by Allah, I don't care what anybody says. You see the characteristics of the Kharijites right in his eyes. The fanaticism. This is a man, he thinks he's going to bring about peace by holding the Kaaba hostage. This is a man, he thinks he's going to change the corrupt ways of the Al Saud by doing even more corrupt things, killing people in the Kaaba. But you know what's scary? And wallahi, this is scary. And you know when I say this, some of the brothers, some of the mashayikh, they get irritated. Yasin, why do you talk about these things? You know why I talk about them? Because these are lessons to be learned. We see the same thing now. What is scary about Juhayman? Senior scholars were duped by Juhayman. Senior scholars believed Juhayman to be righteous. Senior scholars were hesitant. What do? We know this person. A person that I love dearly, Shaykh Ibn Baz, rahimahullah ta'ala, this was his student. And when Juhayman was imprisoned before for the music stuff and the television stuff, Shaykh Ibn Baz himself wrote letters of shafa'ah to get him out of jail. Oh, he's just an overzealous kid, it's all right, he's not that bad. He himself wrote letters to get him out. Obviously, Shaykh Ibn Baz did not approve of the Haram takeover. But what does that show you? It shows you that fanaticism exists in people that might otherwise appear to be righteous, even to our scholars. Many of my teachers, when I spoke to them about Juhayman, I swear by Allah, some of them would begin to cry. Why? Because they remembered their close friends who were killed in that incident. They remembered people that were a part of Juhayman's movement. One of my teachers, he said, most of the people, listen to me carefully, most of the people who joined Juhayman's movement were huffaz of the book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Think about that. They were genuinely religious. They thought they're doing something good. I know another famous person that you also know him, that he was a young student in Medina at the time. And believe it or not, there was one American in Juhayman's group. One American in Juhayman's group. And this American brother, he knew that other American. He knew that other American. And this American told him, my friend and teacher, why don't you join us as well? We're doing something big. He didn't tell him what. Why don't you join us? We're going to Mecca. Just, you know, we have a big plan. And my friend and teacher, he prayed istikhara and he said, I never felt as negative about anything in my life than I did that day. So I said, you guys go. I don't know what you're doing. And alhamdulillah, turned out that that's what happened. Right? The point being, righteous people, other famous scholars, I mean Sheikh Badiruddin, whoever knows him, righteous scholars, his son was with Juhayman's movement. This is not being said to embarrass these great scholars. It's being said so that when we point out these groups are not people with horns coming out of their heads. They're not people with devil tails that you can recognize them. They are hufadh of the book of Allah. They are righteous people, but they've lost sight of reality. They're so incensed and enraged at music and singing that they're willing to shed blood in the Haram, thinking that that will bring about Allah's peace and religion. They have lost the plot completely. And frankly, brothers and sisters, we see the same fanaticism in the modern jihadist movements. There's a lot of dhulm going on. I too was angry and angry that there was alcohol available in that country, that there's so much fahisha. But what's the way forward? To take the Haram hostage? To kill at least 100 people at his hands in the Haram by their sniper rifles? To hold the Hujjaj hostage? Innocent Hujjaj were kept in the Haram. To be fair, eventually most of them, or maybe all of them, were released after a week. But still, for 1 week, for 5 days, you have innocent men, women and children in the Haram who have nothing to do with anything, held hostage, terrified, not worrying, wondering what's going to happen. What type of fanaticism leads to this? My dear brothers and sisters, what did Juhayman's incident accomplish in Saudi Arabia? Absolutely nothing.
Quite the contrary, after the incident of Juhayman, religiosity itself became something that was a bit dangerous. People with beards were monitored. People who showed up for Fajr. This is in Arabia, not in Tunisia and Egypt, which already used to happen. In Arabia, for the first time, religious people were put under government control. Religious people were rounded up and sent to jail just because they were religious, out of a fear of religious people. And this caused a backlash that we are seeing to this day. And by the way, Osama bin Laden himself mentioned that one of the first signs of becoming more Islamic to him was the Juhayman incident. That he took inspiration from Juhayman, and he writes, and I have his writings, and his lectures. He writes that no doubt Juhayman, what he did was wrong, but still I sympathize with much of what he did. Now, wallahi, I have no sympathy for Juhayman. I have no sympathy, zero. You are going to kill people in front of the Kaaba. I don't care what your causes are. You are a fanatic. You are an overzealous lunatic, honestly. I don't care what anybody says. You have lost the plot. I don't have any sympathy for Juhayman. But who had sympathy for Juhayman? Osama bin Laden. And he has writing this in his a number of his speeches that he's given. He doesn't have memoirs. You will find this online. That Juhayman's incident was one of the first incidents that really sparked within him an interest in Islam and religiosity. Because obviously he grew up in a household that was not that religious. It was Juhayman's incident and then the Afghanistan war that made him more religious. Now, Juhayman has written seven booklets and pamphlets, not many. And I read over all of them for a paper that I was delivering at a conference, and it's very scary. Wallahi, I will tell you honestly, and I am somebody who has a master's in theology. I know my religion, inshallah, to a good degree. Wallahi, I was reading his documents with a fine-tooth comb. I was waiting to jump on something that I could say, aha, this shows that he's a deviant. Aha, this shows he's a fanatic. I swear by Allah, I could barely find anything that gave me warning signals. It seemed to be very solid, very well argued, very passionate. And this terrified me. Why? Because I have the advantage of hindsight, looking back. And I'm going through his pamphlets with a fine-tooth comb, and I don't find anything wrong. Imagine those people who were with him, and there were many of my teachers who knew him personally. They all said the same thing, that we really thought he was a righteous, pious individual. Maybe a little bit fanatic, but still righteous and pious. Some of his closest friends didn't know what he was going to do, but this is what he ended up doing. And Juhayman, it's very interesting, by the way, that he always used to say that you accuse us of being Kharijite, but we're not Kharijite. And he would say, just because you say we're Kharijite, no, that doesn't make us Kharijite. Which means what? Even in his lifetime, people were saying, you are Kharijite, you have these tendencies. And he had to defend himself. Now, the point being that Juhayman's movement is really a very, very interesting movement to study, and it came from within the Salafi or the Najdi Da'wah tradition. Juhayman was definitely within the movement. Most of the people with him were students at the University of Medina, of his teachers, Sheikh bin Baz and others, and this shows us that fanaticism can occur no matter what your theology is. You have fanatics in every movement. Just because you belong to a movement doesn't mean you're going to go to heaven. You have fanatics in every single movement. And Juhayman is a good example of that.